Okay, good morning, everyone. We will be moving forward into, we'll finish Rule 4 with what White Magic says about it, and then go on and hopefully do two more rules. Actually, one is quite short, so that might help us. Although I'm sure we can easily lengthen it if we just do our customary work. Just a little dilation. Okay, so I think I better turn this thing off. It makes a lot of noise. The battery cooler.
You don't notice it
while it's
on.
It goes off.
I have
that
other one, but it doesn't make any noise.
Yeah. Well, I do too, but this one really cooks them.
Yeah.
Fast. Yeah. I can cook in 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and then if it's not a good battery, it's...
Does that charge all kinds of batteries?
Yeah, yes.
No, only rechargeable.
Yeah, well, recharge. Yeah, but you know there's a new kind of... battery charger that charges ordinary batteries.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Right. Harold told me about this. Yes, he recharges his ordinary batteries.
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty good, huh?
Keep them on yourself.
Would be helpful.
Yeah, really helpful. I mean, you wouldn't have to buy the expensive ones either. I'll have to ask him about where he gets those. But it's a new thing.
We have two huge boxes.
It could be recharged, yeah. But okay, before dilating, as usual, let us
concentrate.
Yes. So I'll kind of repeat the rules that we have studied, and then when it comes to the two that we'll be working on particularly today, I'll give them twice. Now let's see, okay. So we'll spend a few moments to just settle in. In the way that works best for you, abstract yourself. Do abstract yourself. By whatever means. From identification with the outer person. When you have disidentified with the threefold mechanism and its synthesis, the personality, in the way that works for you, find the soul space. and absorb this energy of the soul, see it permeating the mental unit, and build up a point of tension at the mental unit through the absorption of the will aspect of the soul. Visualize a bridge of color, colored mainly by your soul ray and personality ray colors, as if extending from the mental unit to the monastic permanent atom. Extending to the Buddhic and Atmic permanent atoms, at least in visualization. As if touching the world of pure being, which for our purposes is the monadic level, and from the generated point of tension, we imagine that we hear the sound of the Om, accompanied by the word of power for your soul ray. I assert the fact, I see the greatest light, the highest and the lowest meet, whatever may be the word of power for your soul ray. A line of light flashes across the bridge. And this renders the energy of the triad accessible, at least imaginatively, and thus for the spirit. and we think of the presence of the great ones, their factual presence upon and within this planet, we offer them our inner salutations. It is with wisdom, with understanding, with the light of the higher places that we seek to comprehend these rules of white magic for the mental plane. These are the ones we have studied. The solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep, communicates with his reflection. Shadow hath responded in meditation deep, the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, and the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. The energy circulates, the point of light, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather around its glowing warmth until its light recedes, its fire grows dim. Then shall the second sound go forth. Sound, light, vibration, and the form blend and merge, and thus the work is one. It proceedeth under the law, and naught can hinder now the work from going forward. The man breathes deeply. He concentrates his forces and drives the thought form from him. Article 5. Three things engage the solar angel before the sheath created passes downward: the condition of the waters, the safety of the one who thus creates, and steady contemplation. Thus are the heart, the throat, and eye allied for triple service. Three things engage the solar angel before the sheath created passes downward: the condition of the waters, the safety of the one who thus creates, and steady contemplation. Thus are the heart, the throat, and eye allied for triple service. Six. The devas of the lower four feel the force when the eye opens. They are driven forth and lose their master. The devas of the lower four feel the force when the eye opens. They are driven forth and lose their master. Identify the aspect of the solar angel within the ego as the white magician who impels, forces, drives, initiates the creative process. That we have reached that point in our life when this angel thinks it is possible for right creativity to be pursued by the man considered as the white magician. And so it is our responsibility to become impressed by the design which the angel intends to make manifest. And on that general design, we ponder for a few moments. And we, as the soul in incarnation, the awakening white magician, seek to be responsive to this pattern, to reinforce it, to carry it forward according to the will of the supervising angel. We realize we are training ourselves to approach the ashram and to carry forward its behest in the proper manner, in this case, the white magical manner. Realizing the role for which we are in training, we thoughtfully, quietly sound the great invocation. from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. The point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, we're in training and trying to be very sensitive to that part of the plan which is ours to carry forward and which is the part of the group and groups of which we are a part to carry forward. And somehow we try to give our best in all of this so that the return of the hierarchy, the emergence of the hierarchy, can take place sooner rather than later. You know, the plans have been laid, but the timing, the time equation is somewhat intended but not yet determined. Much depends on the condition we're all in. It can't really emerge until there's a reasonable balancing of the energies. We've been told about that. The economic sharing, the peace, some deeper understanding of each other. So some pretty strong, some educating of the public in the possibilities. And that is emerging, but amidst all the glamours as well. Now let's see. Mara, would you hit that thing? Please. Thank you. We have a little bit to continue on, maybe more than a bit on rule 4. Such a good rule. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's just... It'll be here. Yes, it'll all be on the tape. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't... It wasn't written down. You know, it's as it occurs, you know. The sound, light, vibration, and the form. If you go through every one of those, the manner in which he orders these depends on what book he's writing in. When he writes, and what kind of being he's talking about. The order in cosmic fire generally is... vibration on the highest subplane, followed by light on the second, followed by sound on the third, and color on the fourth. And that makes a lot of sense in terms of the rays that are connected with these factors. They're all products of vibration. So you have Vulcan, let's say, on the first subplane, ruling the law of vibration. And then the light is connected both with the second aspect and with the third, but you have light on the second subplane, and there is Jupiter, and that indicates the monadic light, the substance of all creation. Sound is certainly connected with the third ray, and we find it on the third subplane. It's the ears, it's Saturn, it's the throat apparatus. And then color, naturally related to ray 4, the ray of color, and the fourth subplane. So that sequence is pretty well established. When it comes to the solar logos, he begins on the logoic plane with vibration, and then works his way down. When it comes to the planetary logos, he begins... Hi, Katie, please come in. All right. When it begins to the planetary logos, he... starts on the monadic plane and works his way down. Then he skips something. We don't know what he skips. He doesn't begin on the atmic plane with any vibration. And we, you know, I think if we look at the beings that are involved there, it's some chain lord or kingdom lord or globe lord that is involved with Atma. When he comes to man, he starts on the Buddhic plane. And on the Buddhic plane, he starts with vibration and works his way down. plane by plane. So that's one way of considering the sequence of these three. Of course, they're given in a different order here, and in the Bible, sound comes first. In the beginning was the Word. Later comes, let there be light, and then comes the creation of the form through vibration. Which is correct? Well, I'm sure they're both correct. It's just a question of the perspective. So we'll be working with that order rather than the order that appears in Cosmic Fire. And one thing the magician always has to have is the sense of law. The two most lawful rays are the first and the seventh. And they are also the rays of the path of initiation. When we're on the path of aspiration, it's the six and four that govern, and when we're on the path of discipleship, it's the third ray and the fifth ray which govern. But on the path of initiation, the first ray and the seventh ray govern. And even though we may not be on the first ray or the seventh ray, we're entering an age when we certainly will be able to absorb those tendencies. You know, we're in this period called the withering of the law. That must be pretty obvious. Everywhere, you know, we're going to see around us the uprising of lawlessness on all sides. And this is in preparation for the coming of the Bodhisattva. So people like ourselves who are learning something about occultism really have to uphold this first ray, seventh ray perspective, because while the law is withering, in the Piscean sense, it must be upheld in the Aquarian sense. We have to set an example with respect to those laws, and that means, of course, overcoming our lunar nature, which is fairly lawless. It just is responsive to how it feels. So we have to be examples of this first ray and seventh ray, and we have to become, whatever our nature is, as pillars upholding the temple. Columns. And I suppose this has a lot to do with just our own alignment. The aligned person inevitably becomes a pillar. And a pillar is something that you can rely upon. It's going to uphold that which otherwise might totter to a future fall, to use the words out of a seventh-ray old commentary section. Then we're going to talk about releasing the thought form. And we won't be given the formulas for doing so, but we will be given the hint that by right breathing, we can facilitate the matter. Right breathing, right visualization. We already learned yesterday that even though we don't know everything about how to do this, our good thoughts can be effective. We just have to have confidence, and there are other ways that they can be rendered effective short of the exact formula. And we're going to have to do that this way too. How to release that thought form, we're going to have to do the best we can. I think for those who do the best they can, eventually the technical methods are given. But we want to make very sure that, you know, not only can we be trusted, but that we can trust ourselves when such methods are given. Because we've already proved in Atlantis, perhaps, when things were common property, that we couldn't really trust ourselves or anyone else. So now we get another chance. Rise the thought form from him. Okay. So we're going to get into what he says here in White Magic about these things. And if we can, Tara, would you mind giving us a little more light? Yeah. I know that it's tough to start at 8 and end at 6 and to grind on through the day. On the other hand, DK assures us that we're involved in a forcing process. I think that's not unusual for any member of the hierarchy to insist that this is the case.
Well, what else could be better? On Saturday? I mean, on Saturday, what else?
The beach. You know, the
place to be here.
White caps, the gentle breezes, the
18 holes,
36, come on. The full enjoyment of all the lunar nature cherishes and holds dear. It doesn't cut it anymore, does it? No. Maybe after 21 million years, or maybe for the moonshiners just 10 million, maybe we're Maybe we'd like to be free, you know. Maybe we're tired of the customary. Maybe something better just might be possible.
Breathe a different kind of air.
Yes, a little Buddhic air, if possible. Yes. Did you have something? Yes.
I have a question before you proceed.
Yes.
You associated Jupiter with light, Saturn with sound.
Yes, well, you know, that's a little harder. Because it's so diversified. Of course, it's a fourth ray planet. The Mercury would be involved naturally. It's not the moon exactly, but moon is full of those kinds of changes which are color. And the moon is a veil, and color is a veil. Yes? Yes. Oh, no, no. Okay, you were just deflecting. And of course, you know, Venus, too, is a planet of art, beauty, and color. It's just amazing. Even though Venus is not a fourth ray planet, how often it just shows up on the angles or conjunct one of the luminaries of people who are involved in the arts.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can take theory, and then you also have to just observe and see what actually happens.
Neptune
is another one, and, you know, it's a Buddhic planet for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the colors there would be very sort of translucent, opaque, pastel,
yeah,
you know. They're not the bold, coarse colors. In a way, the fourth subplane of any plane contains a number of chakras and their contrasts. You know, and anything from below the diaphragm down, Mars, Earth, Pluto, Venus is there as well. Venus really does belong in the lower quaternary, so I'm not sure that, you know, it's easy to choose a planet of that type.
Why Venus, if it's already achieved in five rounds, what we're trying to do in seven? That's a little curious.
How did that happen?
Why would it be in the lower quaternary?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is because it achieved its assignment in five rounds. And its assignment is not that of a superior planet like Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, or Neptune. In other words, it's a young planet, relatively, although sacred, and has achieved its intended purpose in a shorter time than was expected. But there are more mature planets who have not yet unfolded their full assignment. In other words, Venus is like the Christ, having done everything faster. And if we carry the analogy further, we might think that Sirius is that way too, having carried things farther, faster than otherwise intended or thought.
Is anything written in the works that it can enable us to, I mean, I guess the whole works are a roadmap to help us get faster?
Mm-hmm. It's love.
Love. They just picked it up really quick.
You know, it's love and wisdom. They didn't get all tangled up. You know, and apparently the third ray contributes to the entangling which has to be disentangled, and love gets very simple. So I suppose, you know, the monadic rays of Venus are 6 and 2 as far as I can determine. 6 as the subray and 2 as the major ray, and that's what Venus is expressing. Plus that clarity of mind on the fifth ray soul that permits a clear vision and does not incline towards convolution the way Mercury does. Mercury is much older than Venus. Mercury is prominent in the previous solar system more than Venus is. Mercury carries the third ray in at least 2 of its vehicles, I think. And Mercury could contribute to the entangling. But Mercury is also proceeding fast now along the way, slightly behind Venus. But I think there are 3 categories of planets. The non-sacreds, first of all, there's a category of planets about which we know practically nothing. They are undiscovered. We don't know whether they're sacred or non-sacred. They're just undiscovered. And some of them have been intuited by various astrologers and named. Astrologers, mathematicians, and psychics have participated in the unveiling of a number of interesting planetary possibilities. Then there are the newly discovered planets which maybe have not been allocated. Maybe Sedna is one, and what's the other one? She's the goddess of discord. Rather plutonic in a certain respect. It's like Xena. It's like Xena the war, you know, only there's another name for her. And it begins with an E. Eris.
Ah.
Eris.
E-R-I-S.
Something like that. And it's in Aries at the moment, and it's apparently the goddess that threw the golden apple out to let the others fight over. Mm-hmm. Who's the fairest? Promoting discord, promoting discrimination.
Okay, in one of the myths, it was Athene.
Yes, that's true. Yes. Okay, then there are the non-sacred planets that we understand them to be the Earth, Pluto, and Mars. And a non-sacred veiled by the sun and a non-sacred veiled by the moon that have not been named. Then there are planets like this, Vulcan, Mercury, Venus. They're in the middle position. They are sacred, but not as advanced as are the higher type of planets. So the monadic ray of Vulcan, probably subray 4, monadic ray of Mercury, subray 5, monadic ray of Venus, subray 6. And they have an actual major monadic ray too. Then comes Jupiter in a category all by itself, midway between synthesizing planets and these lesser sacred planets. He's the king of the gods, but we know he's also the son of Saturn. So he's less than some of the greater synthesizing planets, but almost the equal of the sun in a certain respect. A lesser sun, almost a sun, and we're told even that the sun is the eye of Jupiter. In every solar system, there's one planet that is most like its solar logos. We have 7 of these solar systems, and each one of our major planets is most like one of those 7. I think Jupiter is most like our solar logos. And we could look at certain other ones, but we notice the digression now, but it's of interest. Then come Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Saturn, Neptune, and Uranus, these are the sacred synthesizing planets who are the highest in their maturity, in their actual spiritual age, you might say. I'm talking about spiritual age here. The non-sacred planets are the lowest in spiritual age. The synthesizing planets are the highest. That's different from the degree to which they have unfolded their program on their level.
Yeah.
Venus is of relatively low spiritual age, but has unfolded its program the fastest of all. Mm-hmm. Just like the Christ is younger than the Buddha, a little. You know, I mean, the Buddha, the seeds of the first solar system ripened in the Buddha. He's obviously a moon chainer, and also, with reasonable inference, a representative of the previous solar system. The Christ is then separated from him by how many years? Huge number of years. Huge. You know, but of course there was a pariah intervening. But yet for his program, he has unfolded things very rapidly. And now we are picking up the same kind of speed, we are told, as the Christ has demonstrated. And a number of his Lemurian humanity who are in the hierarchy now are just very shortly behind him, if you think about it. They're in the hierarchy, at least 5th-degree initiates, and the Christ is a 7th-degree, almost, initiate. So how much separates a 5th from a 7th-degree? 2,000 years? So, you know, there are those from early Lemuria who were individualized at that time, who also made very rapid progress, otherwise they couldn't be in the hierarchy.
Is St. Paul a Lemurian?
My impression about St. Paul is it's a previous solar system.
Previous.
That's my impression. Any master powerfully identify with Judaism is from the previous solar system. That means Jesus, Moria, Paul, and Master R.
Master R, too.
Well?
Is there any reference of how many QDVD chips are at the present time?
Well, you know, there is an interesting thought that once a hierarchy reaches the number 63, it can get no larger and has to begin again with a new number. Either that or someone has to move on and someone has to take the place. The number 63, 7 nines is the maximum. Now, I don't know if that includes the three great lords or not, but we're given that number 63. So how many masters are there? I think there are that many at this time. Even Master DK has five masters working in his ashram. He must be a pretty, you know, some people feel he's taken the sixth initiation now.
Because this ether can does not make any sense if we think that we are, how many millions we are, it does not make any sense.
Well, we just have, the statement.
Or do we mean, you mean exactly that we keep always in that structure certain amount and then
that's,
they
that's
go
what I mean.
Right.
I don't know how many. He tells us that there are other, well, I don't know if he means other hierarchies, but sometimes there seem to be. You know, there's the Trans-Himalayan group. It would seem that the three great lords would be head of them all, but there seems to be an Indian hierarchy too, you know. I'm not sure whether they are members of that.
I'm sorry, out of the 63, some are in incarnation and some are not, right?
Well, for a master, what does it mean to be an incarnation? You have a Maya Varupa, so they're either in or not in, and it's the same. They use their vehicle or they don't.
But is that
but they have one.
As a total?
Yeah, 63 within a hierarchy, within the Trans-Himalayan.
Meaning esoteric?
63 is the number we're given. I can go to try to find it, but I don't really want to digress. I want to keep on the subject if possible.
Just one thought on that. You know, if we go back to the life that the second initiation is taken in, usually the third is taken, sometimes the fourth and the fifth.
At least now.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Okay.
<I'll accept that. laughs> In one sense, I can understand that it's like a molecule, and in molecule there is a certain number of the atoms.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense,
it has a structure.
Yeah.
Beyond which it has to begin again, as it were. And maybe there are other hierarchies. It's difficult to say.
But doesn't it make sense that as we grow in evolution, that there will be more? I know some will move to the sea. I mean, we'll move, but then doesn't make sense that we
will. Well, there are going to be a large number of fifth degree initiates. So he tells us actually quite a large number coming. So there would have to be some accommodation for them, I suppose.
Okay, so you're saying 63 now, but there
the 63 is a unit. How many units are there? That's the question.
You know, there will be like this kind of a row of the masters who just pass through hierarchy, because when we rise, there has to be something
to accommodate.
Yeah,
maybe
they
need more
positions.
Make room
for us.
Yeah,
we want
to. Okay, okay. Old digressing group. Yes. What's the next digressory question?
Why doesn't digress?
Yes.
I mean, if we rise in mastership, it doesn't mean that we have to get a job in a hierarchy. We can, in fact, be a master of a sub-master of a hierarchy, and whatever
well,
doesn't work.
Pretty much, pretty much the definition of full entrance into the spiritual hierarchy is mastership. So. I tell you what, why don't we put this into the unsolved category? And, you know, to be solved next week, perhaps?
I have a non-direction.
Yes.
So, Christ completed the program. Venus completed the program.
Is completing.
What are the programs?
Well, the degree of expected initiatory unfoldment. See, the Solar Logos has a program. The expected degree of initiatory unfoldment is the fourth or fifth cosmic initiation in this solar system, but not the sixth. Now, if for somebody, actually, the Solar Logos would be doing very well to complete the fifth cosmic initiation. At one point, it says it is expected to complete the fourth, and then it's hinted that the fifth could be completed. So the time equation always seems to be somewhat in the hands of the entity itself.
We could have been with Venus.
Yes, we could have been ready.
So the program for Christ was what, and the program for Venus was what?
Well, I don't know that we're given that. Well, but, let's just say that it looks like Venus has completed her second cosmic initiation, and the Earth has not. However, I expect that Venus may have completed the third cosmic planetary initiation, being transfigured. And I also suspect that it's possible that a fourth cosmic initiation is in the program of Venus, and I don't know how close it is. I'll just give you my estimation. First premise, whatever Earth can do, Venus can do. Second premise, Earth is the base of the spine center of the Solar Logos, as we read the other day. Third statement, it is expected that the Solar Logos will complete his fourth or fifth cosmic initiation. Inference, to complete the fourth or fifth cosmic initiation, the Solar Logos will need an active base of the spine center. Next point, our Earth, in order to be an accurate base of the spine center, needs its first ray monad activated. Its first ray monad cannot be activated unless it takes minimally the third initiation, and maybe the fourth. So now we come back to the expectation that the Earth will take at least the fourth initiation, cosmically, in order to support the fourth initiation of the Solar Logos, and whatever the Earth can do, Venus can do, and more. So those are the thoughts that kind of, by inference, unfold a picture of what the Earth might go through. But right now, we're dealing with emotions. As if perhaps we didn't realize that. The Earth is struggling on the overcoming the worst aspects of the fourth sublevel of the cosmic astral plane, and is moving into the number five, which will allow a mental polarization. Venus has mastered that five and has moved into the six, which is Buddha. So wherever Venus has been, we have to go. And if we're human beings, wherever the Christ has been, we have to go.
Doesn't he say that on the inner planes, Earth has already accomplished that? It just hasn't worked all the way out?
He says it's a sacred planet on the inner planes. But he also tells us that it has not taken the second cosmic initiation. And he also tells us that to be a sacred planet, you have to have taken the, and now he doesn't get specific, he just says fifth initiation. So, we are engaged right now in taking the fourth of a series of seven initiations on our planet. The fifth lies ahead, and it's my thought that the second cosmic and the fifth minor might occur more or less together in the fifth round. And that would be real sacredness working out. What he means by we're already sacred on the inner side, I couldn't give an explanation for it in terms of these technicalities, but I just have to take it at face value. We've accomplished a lot more internally than we have worked out yet. The creative work of sound. Sound, light, vibration, and the form blend and merge. and thus the work is won. Before centering our attention upon this rule, it would be well to recollect certain things so that our reflection on the rule may proceed with profit. Would you like to study with DK in the same classroom? Mm-hmm. Or do you think it would be really a waste of his time?
How about both? Yes, yes.
Double yes, okay. I guess he's pretty unusual in taking such care to deal with people so far below his own rank, and to deal personally at that, even advising them concerning their diet and other physical things, is quite unusual, I think. First, the rule we are at present considering concerns work on the mental plane, and before such work is possible, it's important to have a developed mind, a well-nurtured intelligence, and also to have achieved some measure of mind control. Okay, we have some preliminaries. These rules are not for beginners. These rules are not for beginners. These rules are not for beginners. I'm trying to impress my mind with this thought. Or is it my brain? I guess we all realize that, you know, even though it's one of the earlier degrees of the Arcane School, the rules themselves are the actual magical work of the soul section, as much as I remember from the Arcane School, deals more with the other stuff in the paragraphs rather than with the rules per se. That's my memory of it. Because what are you going to do? These rules are not for beginners in the occult sciences. They are for those who are ready for magical work and for labor on the plane of mind. So, DK once kicked a member of his group out of that group because he was an astral magician. He said, you have to go. Because you use the many words of the astral plane rather than the word of the soul. So, you know, we can understand, because maybe some of us have studied some of the other kinds of magic which are filled with all the old spells and incantations and all the rest of it, but for the true white magician, the word of the soul is paramount. Love is the great unifier, the prime attractive impulse, cosmic and microcosmic, but the mind is the main creative factor and the utilizer of the energies of cosmos. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma is the creator. So this is creative work. And you know, when you're thinking about the third ray, which is the ray of the magician, even more than the seventh ray in a certain sense, he likes to call it the ray of creative intelligence, rather than abstract or active, all that stuff. That's his best name for it, the ray of creative intelligence. When you think about Master R, you really see that. Love is the great unifier, the prime attractive impulse, cosmic and microcosmic, but the mind, the main creative factor. Okay. Love attracts, but the mind attracts, repels, and coordinates either one, all, so that its potency is inconceivable, especially in our solar system at the moment when the primordial ray, the third ray, is reaching the acme of its power. Much more so than the third ray, the second person of the Trinity. He does tell us, though, in White Magic that, you know, we're not just supposed to use our minds because it's like a spinning flywheel. If you get close to it, it just casts you off. So people that are just involved in only using the mind, they're contributing to separation, repulsion, and disintegration. They need the attractive force of love. Is it not possible dimly to sense the state of affairs in mental realms analogous to that now seen in the emotional? Whoa. Is it not possible dimly to see a state of affairs in mental realms analogous to that now seen? Well, what do we see in the emotional realm? Peace, tranquility, and really a chaos of desire. Can we picture the condition of the world when the intellectual nature, intellect is as potent and as compelling as the emotional nature is at this time? I guess that will cause some problem. The race is progressing into an era wherein men will function as minds. Think about the Aquarian Age. Is it primarily an emotional age? No, it's bringing in the fifth ray through the constellation Aquarius, and the seventh ray is a very mental ray, and that accompanies it for 2,500 years. When intelligence will be stronger than desire, well, you know, we can say the fifth round for sure, and the fifth major round, and when work is being done on the fifth chain and so forth, or in the Mercury globe of our chain. Mercury is a very powerful fifth ray, third ray planet. And Venus is Camelomanus, Mercury is not. Okay. Well, anyway, and when the thought powers will be used for appeal and for the guidance of the world, as now physical and emotional means are employed, we're all said to be in the balances right now in Libra, where desire will decide which way we go. Not that the disciples are. The disciples of the age are in Scorpio, ruled by Mercury, and mind will determine where they go. But when it comes to most people in the world, it's desire. So we have to inculcate the right kind of desire in the masses so that the emotional decision made for ideals and values will be the right one.
And that's what Alex using the word appeal?
Yes, will be used for, yes, in other words, like, who are you going to vote for? Well, let's think about it. You know, well, I like that person. I like Sarah. I'm going to vote for Sarah.
I've got a beard.
Yeah. Yeah. Her. Yeah. Prim. Yeah.
If you look at Ross Perot, and you get a slight image of that appealing to the mind, he had his charts and his. And he got quite a bit of appeal.
Yeah, he did. He did. Amazing, really. Spent a lot of money, got some reasonable appeal. He didn't get too far, but the day may come, huh?
Some people say he was crazy because he presented that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It wasn't just the usual demagoguery, was it? You know? Now, you know, it's interesting about Obama's appeal, it was both. It was rhetorical and intellectual, both. They had a double thing going.
So, he's meaning here, if I get it right, that the power of the astral plane is unified, our mind is unified, we're going to get proper guidance and appeal.
Well, and when thought powers will be used for appeal and for the guidance of the world. Well, either good or bad, you know, the illumined thought would really lead in the right direction.
But if you unify the whole mental field like the astral plane is unified, you get the subtle mind plus the...
You've unified the whole astral field, let's say.
Yeah.
Is it necessarily good because it's unified? I mean, I what I'm talking about is the direction of desire, you know. And I suppose there are a lot of selfish people in the world who reason rationally that selfishness is the way to go. It really appeals to their thought, you know. So I guess what I'm saying is that he's telling us that in the era of thought power, and later he talks about the era of true personalities, hierarchy has a big thing to handle. Why do they have that?
But you can see examples of that right now, you know, where some really oddball thoughts are rationalized to a degree. People accept it and believe it as the way to go.
They do. A lot of conspiracy theories are that way, too. Conspiracy theories. It just made such an impression on me the other night when Glenn Beck said, "I want my whole pie."
Yeah.
Somehow I'm going to remember that. You know?
Yeah. There was an interesting example at Davos a couple of years ago that had some economic summit. And I remember Bill Gates was giving a talk, and he was making the point that isn't it so wonderful that by each of us pursuing our own selfish interests, the world can be made better. Something like that. It was like pure capitalism.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if it's pure capitalism. It's kind of...
But he said that, didn't he? Bill
said that. I mean, I was shocked.
Wow.
I mean, he may think that, but to say that in a national...
It was really weird the other night when we went to see that movie and got home.
Yeah.
Bill Gates and Warren Buffett both were on in a forum in one of the universities in the Northeast. And boy, to hear them talk after seeing that movie, you go, whoa.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's, well, it's just a lot of things. I mean, the students were asking them questions, you know, but it's the quality of their answers that I'm really talking about, because Bill Gates comes off as sort of a megalomaniac or something in some of his answers. You know,
he's megalomaniac, Bill Gates, who would...
Megalo or mental, did you say? Mental maniac or megalo?
No,
megalo. Megalo. Uh-huh. Yeah, Buffett said, there was a quote by Buffett, something like, we're getting rich where we shouldn't be.
Yes.
You know, he said he was actually talking about all the people at Goldman given up, about how great they were. And, well, I'm getting off into that, but better not be.
Well, tonight we're going to do that. Tonight we're going to have the...
He said something that was directly connected.
Okay, well let's bring that up tonight. We're going to have kind of a little party here, or whatever.
My
favorite thing. You don't know about that? You have an interest in it? The idea was that after hours to show David Corten, and then to have a little discussion about the movie we all saw the other night. Does that fit with your schedule?
Well, as far as I was going to go for supper with Broken and Mel, but maybe I can invite them here.
Yeah, sure.
That would be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd love to hear this.
Okay, good. Well, good. There lies in this thought, a profoundly necessary incentive for a right understanding of the laws of thought, and a correct instruction to be given of the use of mental matter and the building of that matter into thought forms. In other words, I think he's trying to protect what will happen when this day comes. Because if we understand how to build the right laws concerning this building, then perhaps some of the dangers will be less evident.
But by the time, the masses of humanity become somewhat mentally polarized, I mean, hierarchy will be well externalized and entrenched, right? I mean, they'll be here in a month.
Well, you know, everything that he sometimes talks about future dangers, and he means in the distance, and he's talking about the mental times and the personality times, whether or not hierarchy is here. So what you say is correct, and yet he still has talked about these coming times when hierarchy will have a big thing to handle, and in the fifth round, yeah, hierarchy will be here, and the worst of everything to handle will emerge. That will make everything being done now look like child's play, you know, our present conflicts. The conflict on the mental plane will be full of exploding causal barriers and mental barriers. The bombs will be going off, you know. Yes.
I'm going back to where they were talking about love is the great unifier and attractor, and mind attracts, repels, and forces. I was associating that with the law of attraction and repulsion, and realizing that both components are actually explicit in that law.
The law of attraction and repulsion. Yes, that's how they talk about it.
The love and the mind, and I'm remembering a phrase that I heard at some point. I think that it was in the study group, a phrase that just struck me so powerfully.
Mm-hmm.
Let there be love in the mind.
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, the loving mind is the Venus mind. You know, that is the union of knowledge and love, or mind and love, is under the province of Venus. And when you look at it, kind of second ray, fifth ray, you can understand that. The appreciative mind, I think that's, you know, something that Sheldon and Helena emphasize a lot. We have to build the Venus mind. We've already got the Mars mind, we've got the Mercury mind, we can attack with our mind, we can think with our mind, we can Saturn mind, we can crystallize with our mind, we can Uranus mind, we can discover with our mind. But Venus mind, to appreciate, to love with the mind, that's contemplation, to merge with that which is thought about. So you're within it, you know, and you become it. And therefore you appreciate through love. In other words, love reveals. So if you have the right attitude of love with any object you're looking at, its true nature is revealed. That's the Venus part of it, how that would go. We have to develop that, I think. Okay. These rules concern themselves with this information. The second necessary recollection is that the worker in magic and the potent entity wielding these forces must be the soul. the spiritual man, and this for the following reason. So, you know, hey, is it us or is it the soul? Or in some way, do we become the soul? Or does the soul become us? Remember these funny laws on the inner planes about the merging of consciousness. This is something we have to always keep in mind, because down here it looks like we are we and they are they, but this idea of the fluidity of consciousness has to be remembered. How one thing becomes another. How you slip out of your own meditation and become something else. This slipping in and slipping out, it's very Neptune in a way. And it promotes the intuition. We have to learn how to do that. We don't want to just have chunky, concrete minds. You know, plop, plop, plop. You know. We need to be a little more fluid than that, right?
I am so.
Are you fluid or... Are you a fluid or a chunk? Okay. Now, by the way, he calls the soul the spiritual man, but remember, the spiritual triad is sometimes considered to be the spiritual man, and in a certain way, the soul is the spiritual triad. We've learned that before. When the soul body is gone, the true soul is revealed. When the egoic body is gone, the true ego is revealed. We are the spiritual triad. What is the spiritual triad? It's no different from the monad. Everything is the monad. That's one thing I've arrived at. No matter who you think you are the monad. No matter what level of immersion you're in, however deep it may be, your being and your consciousness is the monad. Okay. So, thus, the soul, the spiritual man, must wield these forces for the following reasons. One, only the soul has a direct and clear understanding of the creative purpose and of the plan. Well, that's a little humbling, but okay. We have an inner advisor or a consultant, the soul, the first master we meet. Someone within us knows something. That's fortunate. Okay. Number two, only the soul whose nature is intelligent love, that's another way of saying Venus is the soul, can be trusted with the knowledge, the symbols, and the formulas which are necessary to the correct conditioning of the magic work. So, soul is trustworthy. And we are not. All right, well, not yet. Not yet. You know, there's just so many people. My friend Jeff Logie down in New Zealand tells me about all these young magicians running around here. They've got their own communities, their own classes, their own projects. And he's kind of the older man now, literally. He's in his 50s. And he's kind of trying to advise all these seventh-ray types from a second-ray, first-ray perspective. And he finds it very difficult because they're so full of themselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're so ready to just go do things, to do magic. Let's do magic, you know, without a real deeper understanding of the implications. They are not to be trusted, and yet they love power. Mm-hmm. You know, as it says of the seventh ray, I love to see the forms emerge, created by the mind, and do their work, fulfill the plan, and disappear. I love power.
Why that movement is prevalent there?
I don't know. It's a Virgo. It's a seventh-ray country.
Yeah.
And what I have understood is that when the personality ray of a country is a certain ray, and the soul ray of a country is a certain ray, what it means is that souls of both kinds can be found in that country. In other words, there are certain souls representing the personality ray of the country, just like in the U.S., a bunch of six-ray souls representing our six-ray personality, and certain souls representing the soul ray. It's not that when we say we in the U.S. have a six-ray soul, that means we have all these six-ray personalities. We have a bunch of six-ray souls, and that's why we have a six-ray personality. So New Zealand has a lot of seventh-ray souls in it, as well as the second-ray types. And that's our big job. You know, the second-ray is the light carrier. So there's all these other rays that can be very potent in the Aquarian age, the fifth-ray, the seventh-ray, third-ray, so forth. They need the input of the second-ray in order to act in a wise manner. because they're not so wise, although very efficient and very powerful, perhaps. And we have to somehow inform them so that their effective, intelligent actions become less dangerous to themselves and everybody else. So, you know, he's saying, boy, this is a tough group to wrestle with, he's saying. Because they don't want to hear what I have to say. They just want to get in there and do it, you know. You can understand.
Tend to drive their actions a lot.
Sure, sure, absolutely. A bunch of, you know, they're young personalities full of the sense of power, not knowing what they could get into. Okay. Okay, so, and then further, why is it that the soul must wield these forces? Only the soul has power to work in all three worlds at once, and yet remain detached and therefore karmically free from the results of such work. See, if you are attached and full of desire and doing things for egoistic purposes, you are generating karma. But when you are simply fulfilling what the plan demands to be fulfilled, then you are not karmically responsible for that. Only the ego is the karmic generator, the lower ego. Okay. Why should the soul do this? Only the soul is truly group conscious and actuated by pure, unselfish purpose. I'm sure we have our moments when we're soul infused, when this is true. But it's a reminder as to where we are most of the time. Only the soul with the open eye of vision, presumably on its own level, I want to say, on its own level, can see the end from the beginning and can hold in steadiness the true picture of ultimate consummation. Sounds like we should rely upon the soul. You know, sounds like consultation with the soul is very important because it knows a lot. And if we want to function with some degree of what just happened? There we go. Yes, it's just how it all disappears for you. You ask whether workers in black magic possess not equal power? I answer, no. They can work in the three worlds, but they work from and in the plane of mind, which they have virtually made into an independent, self-contained sphere. The 13th sphere. And do not function, therefore, outside their field of endeavor, as does the soul. So the soul is permeating other levels. And the black magicians are, well, that should be BK. Let's see if that works. No. How about this? How about this? Small moment of satisfaction when a code unfolds into its proper. Okay. So they are confined in the lower mind. So the black magicians work in the lower mind. That's interesting. Although, you know, they do seem to have some etheric and emotional effectiveness. And their home base is called Marakara on the astral plane. You know, our type of black magicians that are here, not on the cosmic astral plane, but those that are in the cosmic physical plane, have their place of evil on the astral plane called Mara, Kara. You know, Mara is evil. It's the principle of illusion that the Buddha thought. And Kara means the place of Mara. Would you like to? Well, Madame Roderick went there, we are told. And told them, you guys are doomed. Your number is halved. You're going down.
The warmer
yeah. She said they were very disciplined. Extremely disciplined in their ranks, you know. She addressed them, told them their efforts were doomed to failure and they would be destroyed, and then walked out alive. Not bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
Helena Rorick.
How was she able to do that?
I guess being a first grade soul sometimes helps. I, you know, just imagine Lord of the Rings. You know, imagine walking into an assembly of orcs and other disagreeable types and saying those things. Maybe she just surprised them.
Well, Moria would have been overshadowing her.
Well, I guess it might have been just a little protection from Master M, you know, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm always astonished when I read that.
What exactly? Your efforts are doomed?
Well, like that. In other words, you will be defeated, you will be destroyed, your efforts are doomed. Yeah. You know, there's no hope for you. Goodbye.
I was going to say they live being acutely blind, a unique blindness.
They are uniquely blind, says DK, or brothers of unique blindness. They probably still live in hope that they can somehow just survive in their power. They're certainly acting that way today. They want to take all that power from the earlier solar system and just keep going in this solar system.
When you say they, they're the black magicians, they're the
black masters.
Black masters.
Along their own line.
She wasn't black master.
Well, she went to a meeting of the Black Lodge, presumably held on the astral plane in Marikala.
Was she invited, or she just crashed?
I think she crashed the party. Yeah. But you know, they have a special discount fares now. one way.
It always feels to me like that they must know, and that it's just last-ditch efforts, that they're really desperate to, you know, like the cat clawing, you know, it's like, you know, we're just going to keep on going.
Could be hanging on the cliff. The only thing is that they really won't be defeated for a number of millions of years, because it's not until the judgment day that their real defeat comes, and that's just, you know, 300 million years from now or more.
Well, it's in the alignment of the planets and the alignment of the Pleiades and the Great Bear, the ultimately.
Yeah.
She couldn't do that because she had no fear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how she did it. There's a secret there for us.
Yes,
you
yes.
Know?
Let's practice.
Let's practice.
Who is that gelatinous mass at our door? Yeah, well, that's right. She had no fear, and she had given two lives to the cause even before this one, according to her own writing. You who have given two lives, or something like that, you know, Moria speaking, and so forth. Well, yeah, you know the old story that when the Black Lodge members see a disciple who has no fear, they consider it a very bad sign. Well, that's okay. Hey, our day will come.
Put the fear into that person.
Who would do that, you say? Oh, yeah, they would try to, sure.
Because fear is to put the fear in everybody.
Well, fear means
what scares them when they see somebody that.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, this is guy.
Yeah. I mean, this is what you said?
I know that from personal experience.
That
when they see someone with no fear.
Oh. They try. Yeah, you're right.
They calm down.
Calm down, or retreat, or retreat. You know, or because
we,
you know,
recollect themselves.
It's just like light being shined into the darkness. The darkness will disappear. The fearlessness being, you know, projected into the fear state. The recoil will no longer exist. They'll keep the legions of light will keep marching forward. There'll be nothing left. Well, you know, they're doomed. They're doomed. But, you know, we shouldn't hold our breath. It's possible, even after the second initiation, to veer off. So just, none of us should count our Syrian chickens before they're hatched. You know, because probably some good people, through just a slight turn of mind, could go the wrong way. Okay, they work only from the plane of mind, and they do not function permeating, as does the soul. They can achieve from their proximity and identification with their working materials. results more potent temporarily and more rapid in accomplishment than the worker in the White Brotherhood, but the results are ephemeral. And I would like to say they are ephemeral, because unsupported by principle. In other words, if the great thought power of the planet and of the solar system is creating a pattern which is out of harmony with what they are creating, it's much stronger, and their results will not abide. So you know how it is. If you're a machine, or if you're a human machine, if your parts are working in harmony, they'll last a lot longer, won't they? Than if they are somehow out of harmony with themselves, friction will get you. And the friction will here destroy them, too. Okay, the results are ephemeral because unsupported by principle. I say they carry destruction and disaster in their wake. And the black magician is eventually submerged in the resulting cataclysm, which you might almost think that the earlier Atlantean debacle was a warning. But a lot of those got themselves up, dried off, and began playing with fire instead of water. So apparently the lesson was not learned, I guess. Although I'm sure there have been dramatic conversions. Did you ever read the book Zanoni by Bulwer Lytton? Yeah. Zanoni, it's a very sort of seventh-rate magical book. He was a kind of a Gemini Scorpio guy, a very popular novelist in Victorian England, and he wrote about magical things. And there was the hero, who I guess was Zanoni, been a long time. Boy, that book scared the dickens out of me. It just precipitated the whole world of demons right into your very ethers. We could read that tonight. Anyway, there was this man who was a Renaissance prince, and he had a lot of potential, but he just happened to want to poison Zanoni. And Zanoni, drinking the poison, kept arguing with this man that, look, you have real potential. You don't have to go the way you're going. And the man is waiting for results, but unfortunately nothing happens, you see. So Zanoni knows, a member of the hierarchy, knows how to neutralize the poison. But there was the whole idea that this very powerful, intelligent, rather malevolent person had enough potential within him to change, to go on a different path. But he didn't. He didn't, And yet the possibility always exists. If just one grain of goodness exists within the causal body, we are told by Blavatsky, if just one grain, you can still repent.
Yeah. But I know it's after the, in between the second and the third, when that can still happen. And I guess if that happens, we have to totally know that that has happened. I mean, the soul, I am trying to say that there is already a degree of soul infusion at that stage. So it's not like suddenly you become blind and you don't realize that you're going, path. And you have to know that.
Well, you can know it, but you can tell yourself another story. For instance, Aleister Crowley said that Buddha represented the Black Lodge. Yeah, because he was against pleasure. So he had, So Aleister Crowley had told himself a big story and believed he was the White Lodge and was going on the right path. See, and the great perpetrators of negation.
Denial.
Yeah, like that. And look, Blavatsky said you can wind up in the eighth sphere and still claw your way back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She said, that a lot of the larvae and demons and all of that have somehow made their way back out of the eighth sphere and are trying to redeem themselves.
Where Tika actually puts the five-pointed stars? Tilting downwards.
Well, I think it's a decision you make on the lower mental plane.
No,
he doesn't really do it, does he?
Yes, he does. Astral plane, there is this one place where it comes to reflection.
Okay. I don't know.
Do you remember that chart? It's something about meditation where the star
goes. Inverts.
Yes, because it comes to reflection. And it is on certain plane of astral plane. And I'm always thinking, because there are, for instance, Osho. He also was emphasizing, does he still live?
No, he lives not.
Emphasizing the sexual pleasures and things. And I think that it is exactly there, where if you have ever met a people with whom you talk, and suddenly they say totally opposite, reverse what you said. Have you ever met that kind of people?
But I do understand that that is the technique of the Black Lodge. You have the mass, and then you say the mass backwards, you know. Things are reversed.
And that, I'm thinking about those powerful teachers, because they say good things too, and they do good work. But there is a certain thing in them which is related to pleasure and to sex. What I'm thinking, which is very magical and powerful.
Sex magic, yeah.
And it does not have to be exactly sex magic, but it's magical and powerful. They can do things, they can make things happen on this physical plane. And I think it is exactly that point. Don't you remember that?
No, but I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will research it tonight.
No, also, also had like for what I remember, 1 million sannyasis by him. So and it was this. If you read the books, you know, they have a lot of very interesting material, and yet there is a distortion,
right?
Getting into the second chakra, and then getting the energy.
You really get into it, you can tell that. And they don't have the discrimination to know. Well, anyway, we'll try to do that. Basically, if the lower mental plane is led by desire and by the physical instinct, it's a downward pointing star. If the lower mental plane is inspired by the higher mental plane, it's an upward pointing star. That much you can at least symbolically justify. Let us therefore remember the necessity of a correct use of the mind, and at the same time let us ever hold a position beyond and detached from the creative work of our minds, desires, and physical accomplishments. I mean, that's very straightforward. Obviously, the position in consciousness we are supposed to hold is detached from anything we create, desire, or can physically accomplish. And every time when we do our meditations and we have our alignment, I always think it's wise to begin with what Asajjoli said should be done every day: disidentify from your vehicles. And know that, you know, except in the ultimate philosophical sense, that you are not them. Every day, disidentify. Every moment, disidentify. Otherwise, you just be swept into the wrong belief that you are your instrument. Mm-hmm. And even though we know better, we act as if we don't know better. You know, I mean, what happened to me? I feel bad. You know, I'm depressed. You know, look, you know, I cut myself. Whatever. It's all the myself in the lunar vehicle. It takes the keenest discrimination to act as if that is not you. A detachment which still cannot be an excuse for non-participation. To be detached and still participate, this is what's required. All right. Now we're going to get into these four rules. We just have a little more time before we take our break. Four words stand forth as one considers rule four. First, sound. Okay, first sound. The formula, or word of power which the soul communicates and so starts to work. Well, that's what's at the beginning of the soul's work, right? In other words, what the soul wants to accomplish is embodied in a formula or in a word of power, and this is being somehow communicated to the waiting magician, soul and incarnation personality. This word is dual. It is sounded forth on the note to which the soul responds, his own peculiar note, blended with that of his personality. Now, when you do your Antikarana work and you're building your link to the triad, you work with a twofold bridge, right? And the twofold bridge is really sounding two notes, isn't it? It has two colors, doesn't it? Many of us are working with the primary indigo note or color, and then a color which represents our personality. But really, two notes are sounding. When you get to rule three of the discipleship rules, dual the moving forward. The door is left behind. You know, and then we're told that you have to sound a dual note later in rule seven, which is involving the note that the master's here and then the note that the Chohan's here. So we're often working with intervals. When you sound two notes at the same time, you get an interval. Okay. The word is dual. It is sounded on the note to which the soul responds. Now, you know, that's oftentimes, I think, the note G in the case of the second range soul. His own peculiar note. Although once DK tells us that the note G is the note of the seventh ray. That's maddeningly inconsistent, except if you begin with the note A, then the note G becomes the seventh note. You can, you know, if you can begin C major and the note G is the fifth note, the note of the soul, but if you begin at A minor, then the note G, which is the relative minor to C, the note G is then the seventh ray note. So all of this is going to emerge in this fourth ray, fifth ray, seventh ray age, which is just upon us. Okay.
This is a chord, it says. We got to assume there's some non-dissonance in this chord?
Well, this is interesting. He's not being technical there.
Yeah.
A chord is three notes. Minimum.
Okay.
But he's not using, but you see, if I say to you, you're sounding an interval, well, what does that mean? If I say you're sounding a chord, you're going to get it. So he may just be using the term conveniently. Blended with that of his personality. Now, you know, does everyone here know your note? You know, if you're a second ray soul, you're going to sound a G. But if you're a first ray personality, maybe you'll sound a C with it, or a D. If you're a third ray personality, you're going to sound an F. By the way, that's a dissonance. You know, it's a you know, then neighboring notes. If you're a fourth ray personality, you're going to sound, along with your G, you're going to sound an E. See, a lot of people here are second ray souls. If you're a fifth ray personality, you're going to sound an A, which is the note above the G. And if you're a sixth ray personality, I don't know what you can do. Well, it depends. It depends on whether you believe Blavatsky or... See, there's a peculiar competition between the first ray and the sixth ray. They're difficult to distinguish, and they both use the color red, and the foundational note C, the blazing red note, can be assigned to Mars on the sixth ray, or it can be assigned to the first ray. So I tried to find another note for the sixth ray, and I found A flat, but I don't know if I can justify it, in which case you have a terrible dissonance. And then if you're a seventh ray personality, you're going to sound the note B, which is bum bum da da dee. So it's a second and a seventh ray. It's a consonants. Anyway, you can experiment with this, you know, using these notes, and you know, just start to sound one. Start either way. Start your personality notes until you really identify with it, and then slowly, quietly, begin adding your soul note. Keep the personality note going at the same volume, and then softly begin your soul note and make it get louder, and see what happens in your consciousness.
Did you bring your fish
pipe? I did.
At some point,
yes. In the wee hours of the night, you know. Or you can do it the other way. Identify with your soul note. Keep sounding that soul note till you really identify, and then introduce what might be the dissonance of your personality. But see, eventually what has to happen is not just a question of whether the notes are sounding. It's a question of how loud they're sounding. So, you know, you can have a time in your life when the personality note and the soul note are sounding with equal volume. But you can also have a time when the personality note is sounding, but it fades out relatively to the soul note. And that the question of dynamics, loud, soft, is very important in the sounding of these notes.
But the soul note
so linked to you, like yeah. in the three worlds.
Yeah, so we're not going to completely dis... but, you know, usually the personality note is so much louder than the soul note. You know, what, you know, you really have to listen hard to find out what the soul is doing. So Libra is the point at which you have equality between the personality and the soul note. But once Scorpio tips the balance, then the personality note is a lot, it quiets down relative to the soul note. You know, and at some point, faintly, the monadic note will start to come in. And there are even triadal notes in between. So there's a lot of experimentation that can be done there in the language of music, parallel to the language of color. You, in other words, you could subject yourself to certain color, simultaneously color clashes, color harmonies, or what's a harmony for you. And you could shine one color with intensity and the other color dimly, and you could increase them relative to each other. These would all be parts of the attunement of your inner energy being. And I think it could be very interesting.
Oh, that'd be a great class.
Yeah. Well, you know, if only, you know, who was it that said, give me a point to stand on and I can move the world? Was it Archimedes?
Mm-hmm.
Someone like that, you know, he would have a fulcrum or a lever or something, he could move the world. Unfortunately, the magicians, I used the wrong word, musicians, do not have a place to stand on. They don't know any true note. Okay, yes. And okay, what I'm trying to say is if I arbitrarily choose A440 to tune my orchestra to, 440 cycles per second, and Japan chooses 447, and Bach chooses 416, who's correct? But, you know, give me the exact note, and from that time, the exact frequency cycles per second, I'll determine everything else. But right now, everything is totally relative. There's no sense of what is absolutely correct. Now, maybe C256 is correct, and maybe you can work it out from there. But we've got a lot of research to do. And then, as someone said in the other class, and what does it do to your body? What actually does it do? What does it do to your energy system? You can say, well, this is correct, but it has this effect on you and a different effect on someone else. So we have to work out its practical vibratory effects in different energy systems to know what to use.
Yeah, because everyone is in different place.
Exactly.
According to place, the vibrations would match.
Yes, yes. Well, look, you know, it's going to be a great day when the fourth ray monad comes in, and accompany that will be the powerful fifth ray mind of Aquarius, plus the will to work out all the correspondences under the seventh ray, and we will really be able to understand the artistic language which will attune the individual to his own soul or higher aspect.
It's interesting because space and time are built on that same relative principle. There is no point in space, and you can measure from everything is relative.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes, it's a good point. It's a good point. It's a relative. I've always considered it pointless. Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll just take it's 10 o'clock. Let's take a little break, and then we'll come back and we'll go more deeply into this.